Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Hi, we're going to talk about joy in social work. And so as we go through this presentation, you'll get a sense of how I got onto that topic and what I found. So I'm going to actually talk a little bit about research, but I'm going to talk as much, if not more, about the implications of this work for education, field education, professional social workers, just in general. Dr. Jones knows that I make very strange sound effects and other such things, and he has really, like, egged me on, and he said, well, how many of you saw the trailer for this brown bag? Not everybody, okay. Well, there is a trailer for this, and it's really goofy, but he said I needed to do something kind of funny to, like, really get this going. It's supposed to be about joy. So, all right, here goes. Here's one of my many strange things that I can do. Now, over here is a helium container, and so, okay, got a nice helium balloon here. All right, got to turn this thing and okay, get the end, you know, where you can suck the helium in. Anybody ever done that? You know, it's kind of cool. You get lightheaded when you do it, but
now for the rest of the time, I was talking just about my balloon. So, has some problem with the balloon?
A physician almost 100 years ago said there may be some professions where a man or woman can be of use who does not draw joy from work, but certainly social work is not such a profession. Observing from the outside, seeing what social workers are doing, we were just, you know, say 25 years in at that point as a profession, or even less depending on how you measure it. He's saying, you all should be finding joy. So here we are. Oh, I forgot. Have this.
Yeah.
The joy of technology and punching buttons. I'm like used to like being in a classroom where I don't always use one of these. What are we doing these days in workforce research? Well, we're looking at people's practices impaired. You know, people that are depressed, distressed, abusing substances, experiencing compassion fatigue, and burnout. There's some beginning work starting around 2007, 2008, starts looking at compassion satisfaction, and some Canadian social workers in particular have done a really big study on subjective well-being. And, you know, it's a proxy for happiness. So it's not necessarily joy, but it's about how these social workers feel happy. But we didn't feel like that was enough. What if we focus on what gives life to our work and what can we learn from social workers who find great joy in their work? So, we wanted to know. Do some social workers find joy in their work? And if so, how? And at the time that we started asking these questions, it was at the University of South Carolina, and working with a couple of great folks. And I want to give a little credit where credit is due. A fellow named Terry Wolfer was the one who, after reading David Cooperrider's work, and we're going to see that in just a second, but just got really intrigued because people were asking questions in business, like, you know, when things are at their best, you know, when people are at their best, when the organization's functioning really well, you know, what's going on? business leaders? Do they find joy in their work? Surely they make lots of money and do all that. Surely they find joy. And he was like, well, what about social workers? What about us? So we were inspired by these four perspectives and ideas, appreciative inquiry, narrative therapy, positive psychology, of course, and social work, the strength perspective. But we really were kind of bringing these all together, and it led us to ask these questions about joy rather than about problems. Because if we ask about how many people are depressed, we can find that out. And there are people depressed. More social workers are depressed than other professions. There's David Cooper right here. He's at the Case Western Reserve University up in Ohio in the business school there. And he is the one who started probably about 1980 as a doctoral student looking at appreciative inquiry. Because the business model before that was, let's find out where the problems are and then just deal with them. But that's not the best way of dealing with problems, just to identify and try to solve. There's appreciative inquiry. It combines elements of appreciation, including recognition, value, and gratitude, with inquiry, which includes exploration and discovery. Positive imagery evokes positive emotions, and positive emotions move people toward a choice for positive actions. Another perspective is positive psychology, and there you have Martin Seligman, who is the founder, if you will, of positive psychology. Social work isn't the only one who thinks positive, okay? It's okay, you know, we have a strengths perspective, but there's other people doing work, and they've been doing it for longer than social work has, okay? But what is positive psychology? It's concerned with individual, organizational, community, and societal experiences of well-being, contentment, satisfaction, flow, happiness, hope, and optimism. And it focuses on what makes life worth living, how individuals make meaning and purpose out of their lives, and how institutions, including the workplace, can foster positivity among their members. Now, we know about the strengths perspective, and instead of going into a lot about narrative therapy, it's just that we can restory our lives. We can mark our lives and our stories with problems and deficits, or we can mark our stories by experiences of joy and of good, okay? But let's go into the method. So we asked students in practice classes at the University of South Carolina, that was our first group of people, we just said, listen, you guys have field instructors. Can you tell us the names and some contact information of some field instructors that seem to find great joy in their work? So they did. And we contacted them, and we said, would you agree to be interviewed? And our interviews took anywhere from 45 minutes up to an hour and a half. As we went on, we also interviewed some people in Asheville, North Carolina, and then when I got here to Waco in 2009 here at Baylor University, I continued to interview a few more people. So we ended up with a total of 26 folks. We transcribed the interviews, and we used a collaborative ground and theory process for analyzing. And what we did early on to ensure that we had continuity is after they were transcribed, we coded. And that was all three of us on this project coded and gave, you know, kind of pulled out themes and extracted ideas and gave them names and definitions, which you're going to see some of those in a few minutes. But once we had done about the first 10 together, and come up with most of the major codes, then we went on for the remaining interviews and coded them individually because we, if you will, some internal consistency, reliability, inter rate of reliability, if you kind of want to use some research terms, a little bit different than that, but it's more like intercoder reliability. But you need some of that to have a high level of rigor for the research. We did have a few additional codes that were developed toward the end, so what we did is we went back all the way to the beginning and then not recoded, but added any of these additional ones, if there was a spot to add them, since at the very end we developed a few more. how do we do this? We asked a series of questions to people. We had an interview protocol or an interview guide. And here's some of the questions. Tell me about a recent time you found great joy in your work. As you reflect back on your experience, in what do you find the most joy? Where do you find joy? With whom do you find joy? Like, we're trying to get at this process. What's going on? How has it changed since you first started your career? And then how did you find it? How did you learn to find it? And how would you tell a new social worker how to find joy? And what could you do to experience more joy? So those are the kinds of things that we asked. Here's what we found. We found four dimensions of how people describe finding joy. And these were making a difference, top left, making meaning, and then making connections, here. And then we ended up with this other category of making a life. Because our questions were really about how do you find joy as a social worker? How do you find joy at work? How did you tell someone else to find joy? But they started telling us about how they lived their lives outside of work. That was not what we expected, because we weren't asking that. How do you live your life outside of work that helps you find more joy at work? We didn't ask that, so we weren't expecting, but we got lots of questions, lots of responses around this making a life. So let's start with making connections. And what you see here are some code names, okay? Connecting with clients, being present, being heard, finding like-minded people. And the numbers that you see out to the side here are how many times they were used. So making that connection with the client seems to be the primary, at least the most frequent way that social workers told us about finding joy is this connection, the relationship. So what is this? It's deep. Here's how we define it. Deep, authentic engagement with the client. And here's a quote. There's a deep feeling of connectedness to someone that I knew, that I knew that our connectedness had really helped her through that time. So somehow just being really engaged and deeply connected with somebody, that in and of itself seemed to be the factor that helped that person get through a difficulty. But any day I'm connected with the client makes it a good day. So this one person is basically saying, when I have that connection going, I'm engaged, I'm embedded with that person in the present moment, that's a good day. And being present, just accompanying somebody in distress. You know what's also interesting? None of these are about outcomes per se. This is just about being in the present moment. So as a social worker, sometimes it gives me an opportunity to be there with the parents who might be in distress. This is a hospital social work setting. I can't fix any of the medical circumstances of the day, but I can be there for the families when they're having a bad day or they're celebrating the fact that their baby took his first bottle. So I'm just there. As a social worker, I don't treat, specifically the medical issues, but I'm there. And that's making it matters. And I know that being present with them is a source of joy. Even when I worked for hospice, there was joy in someone allowing me to come into their home and help them experience the challenge of allowing their loved one to die with dignity. It's a very sad, tough situation, but there was still joy. How awesome is it for a family to take home someone and allow them to do that? The privilege of being able to walk alongside someone in major distress, and even when they're dying. These social workers really talk about the privilege of being invited into somebody's world, even when it's really hard, even when somebody's dying. That's what they're identifying as a source of joy. So let's talk now about making a difference. And let me just make some clarifying comments here. We talk about making connections. That's what we do in social work education. We talk about how you build rapport with people, how you connect with clients, how you build and facilitate a therapeutic relationship. Of course, that makes sense. But what we haven't really done is talk to people about how that in and of itself can be joyful. And of course, we also talk about making a difference, don't we? We talk about, we want to know that what we do does matter. That we're not just spinning our wheels or spending time with someone and nothing is happening in that relationship or for that community or for that person. Of all the codes we had, making a difference was the most frequently cited one. 63 times in 26 interviews. Witnessing a client change, receiving gratitude, that can be a word from a client, just, I so appreciate, you know, what you've done. Seeing the fruits of your labor and then facilitating change. So witnessing change and facilitating change are similar but also different. Here's some more codes. Facilitating belonging, relieving distress, receiving appreciation, facilitating supervisee growth. For those of you who are managers or responsible for others, just being able to help them grow, working with supervisees was a source of joy. Facilitating larger system change and influencing programmatic change. So we had some macro folks saying, you know, when I'm standing back, helping move some of these levers in an organization and how we do things or how we provide services, that is joyful. So it's not just making a difference on an individual one-on-one level. It tends to be a larger level. So here's a definition of making a difference. It's a positive effect in a client's life. I don't get joy from saying these fancy words and doing these fancy things. I get joy when somebody is changed or when somebody is grateful. So it's not about the process in and of itself, although that can certainly be the case. But it's when someone's changed. There's days when I'm frustrated and I want to pull my hair out, but at the same time, there's still this passion and joy in the fact that I'm involved here. And at some level or another, it's making a difference in people's lives. Contributing to a client's growth and change. Where he was when I first met him and where he is now, it's just been almost a complete turnaround. And I'd like to think maybe I had a little bit to do with that. But I would say I find a lot of joy from that child. You know, I love that. It's not like I had everything to do with it. I had a little something to do with that. And that's joyful. Seeing the fruits of your labor is observing long-term results. Things bring me joy when I can see things come to conclusion. Because a lot of times with social work, you don't see things. You see things started, but you don't see things finished. It's just a joyful experience. Some of you who've practiced for a while, I'm sure there's been a situation where you did not realize the impact that you made, but someone came back, or you saw someone, you got some feedback, you did make a difference. And I was like, that's it. That's what that code is talking about. Receiving gratitude, acknowledgement, and appreciation by clients. This is a great story from one of the interviews. I'm so happy to see him. I forgot it was a social worker, professional. It was a situation where there was like a child in kind of a foster care group home type thing, and social worker had worked with him for a couple years, but his life still seemed to be quite a mess. And he was like 21 or 22 doing some vocational training in college, and this is what happened. So she forgets she's a social worker. She's like, oh my God, he's like my child, you know, this immediate connection. I hugged him tight, and he says, hey, Miss M, hey. And he said his name, and he started crying, and he said, everything you've ever done for me, I've never forgotten. Isn't that amazing? I love that. Innovating at work. So we found that people were able to make a difference when they were free to innovate and not totally constrained by their environment. And I love this quote. Find something that excites and that you're passionate about and do it. Don't let yourself be put in a box. And even if you take a job because there's a job description and a check with it, there's something about that that can elicit a passion. In most cases, you can go beyond the job description. It's like, innovate. Do what you need to do. Don't just be constrained. Then making meaning. Now this is something that we do not talk about much at all in social work education or in field instruction or in the classroom. This is not something that tends to show up, but showed up as a huge dimension in this research. And one of the things is finding fit in work. Isn't that interesting? These folks said, you know, kind of my compass and meaning is I found where I fit. I found where I need to be. I found what I like to be doing. So doing what you're good at, doing for others, loving or liking what you do, finding meaning in work, and then finding purpose. This is an example of finding fit in work. What makes me happy and gratified and is paying my soul back is that I found the right fit for me. I think that people who are burned out may not have found their best fit, their best work venue. And that may be true because, you know, burnout, if you look at the definition of burnout, there's a large aspect of that that relates to organizations. It's not just sort of individual. It's not just me. It's me in the work environment itself. So what this person is saying is find the right place to work with the right population, that kind of thing. And I would just also say, we seem to find a theme that people are willing to take the risk to move. In other words, they work somewhere for a couple of years. Instead of becoming cynical and jaded and, oh, well, I guess this is how social work's supposed to be, they're like, no, I'm going to make a change. And there are aspects of my job that suit me that I love. I think those suiting me as a person helps me find joy in them. It's the real fit of a self-awareness of who I am and what I bring to the table and where's the place to express that. Not organizations are equal. Let's just admit it. Now, making a life, I tried to put this big red blob over it because it seems to be then where everything else kind of happens. Remember, it was like I was saying earlier that we were asking about finding joy at work, and they're saying, well, here's how I live my life just in general. At work, not at work. Here's what I do. Here's how I live. And we couldn't think of anything else better than call it making a life. And I like the little quote of them, never get so busy making a living that you forget to make a life. It's a good one to remember right now as those of you who are students or field students, and probably not a bad thing for anybody who's been practicing social work for a while. It's never too late to make a corrective. All right. Gaining perspective, managing expectations, rejoicing in little things, maturing and learning continually. So gaining perspective is about recognizing what's important and abandoning illusions. Sometimes, you know, social work is very depressing. No question about it. But all that has a tendency to make my life in perspective and make me happier. So the difficult times, the depressing things, help this person see what does really matter. It brings perspective. It's a backdrop then. And I'll have to say, I think of my own journey and added in here, you know, to think I had it bad sometimes. Oh, I really struggle with this. This is awful. Ugh. Start working with people with severe and persistent mental illness, and it's like, you know, why am I complaining? I should be really grateful. I'm not dealing with any of the kinds of stressors and problems and overwhelming challenges that these folks are. And all the clients, all of the experiences have taught me so much about myself and have taught me so much about life and what is really important. So we've got another, I don't know, hopefully 15, 20 minutes, and I'm going to have you all do a little bit of work at the end. But let's start talking about the implications of these different dimensions. All these making. And we purposely, as we didn't know what we were going to call these things when we started the research, The only preconceived notion that we had going into this research, we thought that joy didn't just happen. That there was a sense of personal agency and initiative in finding joy. So that's something that was the only thing that we went in thinking and came out the back end with that confirmed. Yeah. So one of the things I can clearly say, every social worker will not find joy unless they want to. Finding joy can happen, but it may not always happen. So I'm just wondering, let's just ask the question, what if finding joy were part of our social work practice skill set? That it's important to have a positive outlook and attitude that you can bring with you to the work setting? What if that were actually a part of our skill set? And I will say that having given a similar type of presentation before, that starting to talk about joy, focusing on joy, you know, blowing up helium balloons and talking about funny things, but doing that kind of, it's contagious. Because if all I do is moan and groan about this agency and my supervisor and what they're doing and I'm depressed and I don't like my job, guess what? That's all contagious too. You're going to join on and, yeah, you're right, dude. This sucks, you know? So let's be contagious about the positives. Again, social worker sense of agency, self-efficacy, and initiative. Clearly, people will not find joy unless they choose to find it. And you've been given some examples here of how social workers have found it. Also, this research clearly says the stuff we've always known and can never forget. The role and primacy of interpersonal relationships. I don't care how technology develops. If we ever get to the place we're no longer deeply connecting and in a relationship with people, this profession isn't going to matter anymore. Because we matter because we know how to do that. And we're figuring out how technology fits into all this. But this research absolutely highlights how important it is to keep relating and connecting. It also says that when social workers know they've made a difference in a client's life, they find joy. Well, how do we know we've made a difference? The EBP thing, you know, evidence-based practice. How do we actually know? And it's possible clients told us, gosh, you have made a difference. I am getting better. But there may be other ways that we can measure that and know for sure that what we're doing and how we're intervening is doing something. I think this is also huge for recruiting people for social work. The likelihood of having an awesome career, through the roof. So to those of you who are students right now and thinking about the future, this should be very heartening and uplifting. It's like, yes, joy, it's coming. If it's not already here. And we also wonder how this research connects with vulnerability. We saw a lot of social, they didn't use that wording, but they were putting themselves out there, stretching themselves, getting themselves a little out of their comfort zone. And so we wonder how that relates to vulnerability, Brené Brown's work on vulnerability. I'll give a little shout out to Jasmine Holiday over here. In her MSW program last year, last spring, she did some research with me and started and did some additional interviews asking social workers about vulnerability. So you can talk to her afterwards if you want about some of that research. So let's go to, these were kind of the broad implications. Let's go to the specific dimensions. Well, if making connections is so important, I think it highlights the primacy of field education in the relationship with the field instructor. That's a different kind of relationship than a student has with a classroom teacher. The field instructor is different, and I just really think it highlights how important that is. I cannot tell you how many people really either have great or horrible experiences with field instructors. It seems to be one or the other. You know, it's not just, no, they're okay. It's like, I'm loving this. I enjoy this relationship. Oh, gosh, I'm feeling stressed. Renewed emphasis on relationships and use of self. Again, primacy relationships and the importance of high levels of self-awareness and how you use yourself in relationship with people. And I also think this has a lot to do with how meeting students where they are. Whether that would be me in my own classroom with students, meeting people where they are, whether it's a field instructor. We, just like we meet clients where they are, we meet students where they are and help them grow and help build relationships right where they are. And even without measurable outcomes. Remember, this whole thing about making connections wasn't about, I made a difference, my client got better. It's like being with, being present. So even without the outcomes, it's still important. It's still happening. So, we got to model with our students what we wish them to do with their clients. As an instructor in the classroom, and as someone's a field instructor with students, we are modeling with them what we wish them to do with their clients. It's not, I'm going to tell you what to do, and you go out there and practice that. We are in interaction with people, in relationship, modeling what that looks like. And we're also nurturing relationships with students or interns. So if this research does anything, I hope it gives everyone here a renewed passion for this whole idea of building relationships and finding joy in them. And if you're not, ask yourself, why not? It's certainly possible. So what's going on with me? I can only change myself. So what is going on with me? Making a difference. When I was at the University of South Carolina, I was on the admissions committee there, and a lot of students would say, a real simple statement, I just really want to make a difference in people's lives. We'd be like, come on, something a little more profound, please, you know. But you know what? What we found out, we were shamed, if you will. Felt bad because over and over and over, why not? It's the simplest of all things. And it can absolutely fuel and energize you in doing social work and getting through an educational program and learning from others. Relationships are definitely at the core of effectiveness. So we certainly see relationship, but you're never going to be effective without relationship. And again, I've already mentioned this, the benefit of formally evaluating practice. So for the teachers and field instructors, building relationships and rapport with students is a parallel process of teaching students to relate with clients. Again, well, it's all about modeling. And for making meaning, you know, when people use language around calling or purpose, or this is what I feel like I was meant to do, don't dismiss that. I know the University of South Carolina, a secular agency, whatever, they would see people use that kind of language. Religious fundamentalist, you know. It's like, no. And can I tell you, we didn't interview Christian social workers. We didn't solicit people religious or spiritual. We asked the question, how do you find joy in your work? And they started telling us about this. And so the cool thing is there's a real absence of God talk, which I found refreshing. It's like, can you tell me something meaningful without over-theologizing it? You know, I found it actually refreshing. So they were telling us what they were doing, how they were finding joy to have this wonderful, sustaining, satisfying career. And they didn't have to use a bunch of God talk and rhetoric to do that. Well, we can validate then people's relationships between joy and a sense of calling and purpose. So if I see that language show up in an application, or you have someone who's applying to do an internship at your agency, and they may use some of that language, validate it. It's a good thing. Okay, it's a good thing. And it may have everything to do with the meaning they find in their field internship experience. This also promote reflection on choices. Why? Why in social work? Why are you here? What part of your story got you to the table right now? There's something there. It's important to share, explore, and celebrate. promote reflection on your experiences. Those of you who have been doing this for a long time, man, pour out of yourself. You've got all these experiences to share with people. Sometimes that in and of itself is important. And then affirming purpose and meaning in difficulty, stress, or pain. What we're saying is that the social worker is saying, you know, when it was hard or when it was depressing or when I was overwhelmed, I learned something. There was meaning in that for me. I learned some things about myself. I learned some things about others. I learned about how people deal with problems and cope with things. Consider the legacy of your own work. And this is, again, for me, for Dr. Dyer, for others in here, consider the legacy of our own work and reflect on why we chose social work and education. And making a life. Who we are is way more important than what we do. Even though these social workers enjoyed social work practice so much and gave all these examples, they never used that phrase, but it came out over and over. It's like, on some level, as much as you find joy in it, there's also a diminishment of their role in it, which gave them more freedom to enjoy it. It's like, I'm not all that. I'm not making that much of a difference. I'm just doing little stuff. But that's where the joy is. So, we got to get off our little pedestals. It's who we are is way more important than being a social worker. Social work's great. Don't get me wrong. Love the profession. But when the day is done, you know, I'm going to be true to myself and who I am and not feel wet. I must help people. I must do this. You know, that just leads us down a pretty unhappy road. Finding joy in work is related to how we live outside of work. So our perspectives, rejoicing in little things, this making life, it's like, I don't make a mountain. I remember when an older social worker said, you know, little things are just little things, finally. It takes me a long time to get there. I used to make big deals. We do that when we're younger. We just do. We don't know. And so we get a little older, like, you know, gosh, that really is not that big of a deal. Nurturing relationships in and out of work. It's also important. A lot of people talk about the relationship they have with family, friends, others, not just helplines. They talked about these balancing relationships with others that I believe what I call reciprocal relationships. Because when we work with clients, they're not designed to be reciprocal. We're not supposed to get something back from them to meet our needs. But I have needs, and I need to get them met, and I need people in my life that I can do that with. And then a balanced life. I don't exactly know what a balanced life is, but I think it's important to talk about it, ask questions about it, and see how I can find joy in having a balanced life. Why not? What does it really mean? Because I've seen a lot of social workers who will literally grind their fingers to the bone working. I'm going to stay a few extra hours here. Just keep working. And it's like, that's painful to watch. Slow down. Back off. You know, it's not going to be that important in the end. You know, it's kind of funny. I'm saying, this is so important, but yet it's not important. I don't know how you figure that balance out, but that's kind of what they're telling us. It's like, this is so important, it really matters, and yet, it kind of doesn't, all at the same time. Keep perspective and appreciate small gains. That's with clients, that's with your own life, that's with, you know, it doesn't have to be about these really big things. These social workers, it's like they learn to hone their vision in their heart to just see the small stuff and appreciate it. Have realistic expectations and acceptance while taking initiative to change what we can. The best example of that is the Serenity Prayer. It's like we need to know when to accept, radically accept things and keep intention when I need to take action, when I need to do something. Practice being grateful and be a lifelong learner. I hate seeing people that have it all figured out. I don't care if they're young or old or anywhere in between. It just irritates me. You know, nobody has it figured out. We're all still learning. You know, when we get older, we've had some life experience. You know, we have some nuggets of wisdom to share with others. But some of those nuggets of wisdom I heard from older people is, I don't have it figured out. It's like, whew, that's so refreshing. You know, I thought there was so much pressure to have it all figured out. All apply for teachers, field instructors. What we teach students now, how we relate with students now, may influence their capacity for joy and their ability to have a satisfying and sustainable career. So this very presentation right now is laying the seeds for you to think about what it really means to find joy in your work, long term. Oh, I kind of talked about that already. Okay. Learning culture, classroom, field instruction, agency, all this. Use positive perspectives. Use positive perspectives when evaluating students. Identify what is going on well in field and in the educational program. You know, getting the negative and nitpicky stuff is really contagious. You know, I can tell you what's wrong here at Baylor School of Social Work, you know. And, oh, yeah, and you get a bunch of students. It's like, no, let's look at what's going well. To look at what's going well doesn't mean you minimize problems. This isn't pie-in-the-sky stuff. This is, yeah, problems are real. It just means there's a whole new backdrop of positivity and joy that can frame your thinking. Model the process of finding joy. If you're a field instructor, model it. If you're me or you're Dr. Dyer or anybody else in the room, model it to other people. How you talk openly about it. Calling out the best in people and in processes. What about assignments? You know, interview a social worker. Ask about their sources of joy. Why not? Why couldn't we do that? Go out and talk with a social worker about how they find joy in their work. Or learning log. Talk about a joyful experience in field. Why not? Why couldn't we do that? And discuss what students appreciate in their field settings. So, we have about 10 minutes left, and I want to open it up maybe for some questions. But if you have something you can write on, short, 6 to 10 words about finding joy. And then, as soon as you have written your 6 to 10 words down, like we can be a little like popcorn. You can just say, read your little joy sentence. Finding joy in practice, in your life, in your internship, at your work, whatever your role and responsibilities are. Six to ten words? You got one? Go for it. Yeah?
Sure. Just three phrases: opening others' eyes.
Ooh.
Collaborating to change. And then receiving another person's
vulnerability. Hmm. Opening. Oh, that's great. Oh, man. Contagious. All right, let's go next.
I wrote two
practice
and
one is a teacher of social work.
Yeah. Finding joy in helping others, finding joy. Yeah. Did someone else have a hand? Yeah.
Mine was up the same thing. I find joy in seeing others have joy.
Ah.
So that makes
me happy. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
Leaving people better than the way I found them.
Leaving people better than the way I found them. All right, one more, and then I'm going to just ask if anybody had any questions about anything. But one more story. One more sentence. Last but not least, yeah, I got a hand popped up. Okay.
I put down just the focus on making relationships, building relationships, and then just not taking things so seriously.
Yeah, I love that perspective. Building relationships, not taking things so seriously. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because we can get so serious that we like squash out our capacity to find joy. Well, I'm going to open it up. We have 5 minutes before it's officially over. Do we have any questions? Thoughts? Ideas about this? Anything you might do differently? A burning, you know, I gotta share this. I gotta ask this.
My mentors said to me one time, you're not responsible for how your client uses your word. You're only responsible.
That's good. Yeah, somehow unhinging ourselves a little bit from how the client uses our work, because we don't have any control over that. But if we bring all of our whole self to the table, that's a, you know, that I will say, that's a good way to end. The social workers who found great joy are what we would, you know, kind of using Brene Brown's language, they're all in. They're holding nothing back. It's, I'm completely in this. I've jumped in. I'm wading in. I'm in. I'm all in. Is there a guarantee that something good's going to happen? No. But when you're all in, you're going to find joy. At least that's what we see social companions. That's a great way. Yeah, all in. All of my knowledge. All of my skill. Everything that I am. My uniqueness. I'm going to bring it all to the table. I don't have control of the outcomes, but if I at least don't bring all of me and everything I'm learning and doing, the problem won't find me. I appreciate it, folks. Thanks for being here. Hope you can take something away and use it and do something. Have some conversations in your agency, in your classroom, about finding joy. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.